Dear brothers and sisters, I thought we'd, by way of thought, that we might just consider a little bit about miracles. I guess we'll be hearing some about miracles from Brother John shortly, but I'm not going to touch Luke at all, I promise. Particularly, just want to think about this miracle in John chapter 9, and then if we've got time, there's another miracle I'd like to think about. Okay, this John 9 that we've just read, those first three verses, Jesus passed by, saw a man which was blind from his birth. That's important. And his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, Neither hath this man sinned, nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. That the works of God should be made manifest in him. I don't know if you remember, but earlier in John's Gospel, in the sixth chapter, some people ask him, What must we do that we might work the works of God, they say. And Jesus replies, This is the work of God, that ye believe in him whom he hath sent. So that's the work of God. And we can see that coming through now in this chapter. The work of God, if we want to work the works of God, we do it by believing in him whom he hath sent. That's interesting, that idea of sent, because that comes up in the chapter, the pool that Jesus sends the blind man to afterwards is the pool of Siloam, which means sent. So there's quite an issue of things being sent in this chapter. Let's just have a look at the 35th verse. We'll go to the end of the chapter. We don't have time to look at all the details of the chapter. But we're talking about Jesus's mission, Jesus's works. Verse 35, Jesus heard that they had cast out the man, as we earlier read. When he had found him, presumably not in the temple, because he'd been cast out of there, he said unto him, Dost thou believe on the Son of God? That was the works, wasn't it, in from chapter 6. And the answer, well, who is he? And then Jesus says, probably quite significantly, Thou hast both seen him, and he hadn't seen anything before that. He was born blind. It's important. He'd never seen anything. And now he sees the Son of God. He that talketh with thee. And so he declares in verse 38, Lord, I believe. And he worshipped him. So we can see the works of God happening there. And then these comments that Jesus makes to the Pharisees afterwards. Well, he says he's come into the world for judgment, that is, for differentiation. I am come into this world that they which see not might see, and they which see might be made blind. So he's going to differentiate between two sorts of people. And then this comes up in the next two verses. Some of the Pharisees which were with him heard these words, and they said, Are we blind also? Quite an important, are we blind? So he wasn't just talking about natural blindness, was he? They were beginning to realize that he was talking about seeing, not just literally, but seeing the truth, particularly about who the Son of God was and believing in him. And then Jesus makes this rather enigmatic statement, doesn't he? If ye were blind, ye should have no sin. Well, this man was born blind. But now ye say, we see. Therefore, your sin remaineth. What could they do about their sin? They could do very little if they didn't believe that they were blind in the first place. In fact, just going back to those earlier verses in verse 4, Jesus says, I must work. So this is what we should do to work the works of God. I must work, says this is verse 4 now, chapter 9, the works of him that sent me. Here's the sent idea that came up in chapter 6. While it is day, the night cometh, when no man can work. So here was this little window of opportunity for mankind. God, who at sundry times, diverse manner, spake in time past unto the fathers by the prophets, hath in these last days spoken to us by his Son. And that's what Jesus was doing, wasn't it? He was speaking of his Father. He came to manifest his Father's name, and it was a window of opportunity. Now, the Apostle Paul speaks about this window in his second letter to the Corinthians, chapter 4. And he speaks about the light shining into their hearts, the apostles' hearts. So this is chapter 4, and looking at verse 6. God, who commanded the light to shine out of darkness, and here's this light, that I am the light of the world, says Jesus. He commanded the light to shine out of darkness, hath shined in our hearts, that's the apostles' hearts, to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. So here was this light shining, Jesus Christ, the light of the world, sent by his Father. Because God commanded the light, so he sent it. It was a sending issue again. And just later in the chapter, it's in the 13th verse, the apostle says this, we have the same spirit of faith, according as it is written, I believed, and therefore have I spoken. We also believe, and therefore speak. I believed, and therefore have I spoken. What's the significance of that? Why does he say that? Well, he's quoting from Psalm 116, actually, which is an interesting psalm, probably written by Hezekiah. But if we look at, just look at where he was quoting from there. Psalm 116. This is what the Apostle Paul was quoting in relation to the things that he was speaking about. Let's have a look. Verse 10. These were the words quoted. I believe, therefore have I spoken. I was greatly afflicted. I said in my haste, all men are liars. I said in my haste, all men are liars. Or to put it in another phrase, all men are born blind. There is nobody who is born knowing the truth. There's no one born having this glorious light in themselves. As Dr. Thomas used to call them, self-illuminati. There's nobody like that, is there? The only thing we can ever say about the truth is what we first heard about it. That's why the apostle said, I believed. You've got to first believe that which was shone into their hearts. Then they could speak. And so that glorious message, that glorious light, which Jesus was transmitted to us. And what a wonderful privilege that is. So that miracle, that the healing of the blind man, it wasn't just an accident. It wasn't just a blind man happened to be there and Jesus healed him. It greatly reinforced the message. It reinforced his mission that he was sent to illuminate, to make people who were blind and able to see. Because everyone's born blind. But of course, if you say, well, I'm not blind, then you've got no chance, have you? It's rather like the physician. He can only heal someone who recognizes they're ill. Now, there's another example. Have I used my 10 minutes? I didn't make a note. I'll just quickly give this example. It's another miracle, but this time, a bit later on, after Jesus had died and risen again, and it's in Acts chapter 3, so we'll probably scoot through this fairly quickly so we can get on to the important announcements that we're going to see. So Acts chapter 3, and... this is the occasion when a man who... Well, let's read the first few verses, first two verses of Acts 3. Peter and John went up together unto the temple at the hour of prayer, which is the ninth hour, and a certain man, lame from his mother's womb, was carried, whom they laid daily at the gate of the temple, which is called Beautiful, to ask alms of them that entered into the temple. So here again, we've got this issue. Someone is born with this condition. Born from his mother's womb, he was lame. So he had this disability from his mother's womb. And we know the story, don't we? He was carried every day by his kindly friends and relatives. I mean, just imagine you were that man. As a child, you'd been unable to play with other children. As you grow older, your disability would become even more obvious. You wouldn't be able to earn a living. There's no NHS, no benefits. And you're dependent on the kindness of friends and relatives. And these friends and relatives, every day, took him up to the beautiful gate of the temple, which was up a considerable flight of steps. It's quite a height to get to the beautiful gate of the temple. And he asked, he's there to ask alms, and we know what Peter did. He looked at him, and in fact they both looked at each other. Silver and gold have I none, what I have give I thee. In the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, rise up and walk. And his ankle bones received strength, and he leapt up. Now he was still on the outer part of the temple at this stage, so he leapt up and went into the temple. Now, to get into the temple from the gate, from that double gate of the temple, you have to climb a lot more stairs. Now, he'd never walked before, this man, never moved before with his own limbs. And now he climbs up these steps, and he's found on the eastern side of the temple mount by Solomon's porch, and that's where there's further incidents. And he's found holding on to Peter and John. You can imagine that, can't you? The exhilaration of his experience. And so he clings on to Peter and John. He was so excited by his newfound ability. Well, what's this got to do with the gospel that the apostles were preaching? Well, in chapter 4, the Pharisees were grieved by what the apostles were teaching. What were they teaching? They taught the people and preached through Jesus the resurrection from the dead. They were preaching the resurrection from the dead. What had Peter said to this man? Rise up and walk, he said. And he used the word egairo, which is the Greek to raise up. And that's a word often used of the resurrection. Rise up and walk. And when he describes the condition that he'd been rendered in verse 16, he said that it's the faith which by him hath given this perfect soundness in the presence of you all. So what it looks like is that this miracle, which actually resounds into the next few chapters of the of Acts of the Apostles, comes in the next day, because they knew, everyone knew, he'd been born lame from his mother's womb. So what relevance does it have to the preaching? It has to do with the resurrection, doesn't it? And maybe this man's exhilaration, this man's excitement, is just a faint taste of what it would be like to be raised from the dead. If he was so excited at just an earnest of the resurrection, how much greater may we be excited, brothers and sisters, by the real thing? And what a wonderful thing to look forward to. But the point is, I think, that the miracle was not a coincidence. It wasn't a coincidence that this man, who had been born from his mother's womb, just like we are born with a disability, we don't have immortality, we need to be changed. This man also was born in this condition. So also one day, Jesus, who was sent to illuminate us, may raise us from the dead. And so the miracle reinforced the message that the apostles spoke. And maybe we'll see that in the miracles that John will speak of in the addresses we're shortly to hear. Thank you.